Hello, everyone. I'm Jake Longwell. Welcome to another edition of Clearing the Static on Geneva Community Radio, a program discussing developments in radio in the United States and Canada. We're archived on the web at clearingthestatic.tripod.com, and later on, we'll be giving you all of our contact information on how you can get a hold of the program, ways to friend us on the internet, and much, much more. As usual, I'm joined by the Radio Kid. Hello, Radio Kid.
Hello, how are you this beautiful Saturday evening?
I'm doing well as we go to record this on a Saturday evening. Just so that everyone knows, we typically record on Saturday for broadcast on Sunday. So, no, we're not a day behind in our reality.
No, we didn't get lost in the Herald camping mess.
Which is one of the things that certainly... we're going to be talking about just briefly on the program, because honestly, I don't think there's... In fact, let's talk about that right now.
Yeah, because now, if you weren't following this saga, this is Family Radio co-founder and I guess I'll say evangelist and resident lunatic Harold Camping. He predicted that the Judgment Day would come on May 21st, which was last Saturday, in the form of an earthquake that would happen at 6 p.m. in each time zone. And at that point in time, the good faithful would be raptured into heaven. Well, suffice it to say, it didn't come. In fact, we were taping at the precise day and time that Rapture and Judgment Day were supposed to come, and it was quite a broadcast. If you missed it, it is, or it will be,
it is
on the archive at clearingthestatic.tripod.com.
Yes, it is. It is up there now, and yes, we did take a very critical look at this. So if you missed it, definitely take a listen to what we have to say.
Actually, before we get into our analysis, we actually did get some response to this radio show. A lot of it very critical response. We got a response from someone who wished to remain nameless. And this person basically wrote, "A good job for not believing his rhetoric, but why did you give him so much airtime?" This person states they did not feel that Harold Camping deserved so much airtime, almost an hour's worth. Why couldn't you have used that time to preaching the true word of God? First of all, we are not a preaching program, and it is normally not our place to analyze the sermons of preachers. We normally don't do that. We also don't... While I am biased, we normally don't take a view or express a view of any religion. This was so prevalent in radio. And this man who owned, 66 radio stations in the U.S. was really making his impact on the world. This went global. We could not help but pay attention to this. This was something that we felt we needed to address. We did not give him this airtime just to, give him a microphone for his platform. If you go back and actually listen to the radio show, you will hear that we analyzed in detail everything that he was saying, and that we played this audio as audio evidence. So that this is archived in time, so that people can know what kind of evangelist Harold Camping really is. We did not play that audio just to give him a platform.
Absolutely, because he's been giving himself a platform for decades. So, yes, we did get a chance to listen to his open forum on Monday, in which he fielded comments and questions from various reporters.
Yes.
And now, according to what he is saying, in a nutshell, the new date is October 21st of this year. But he is all done. preaching the warning, because basically it's too late for those who do not follow the word of God.
Correct. Correct. So the billboards are done. You know, they're not going to talk about Judgment Day anymore. I was listening to some of their open forum. I don't even think they're not even really talking about October 21st anymore.
No, and I think I seem to recall him saying that he wasn't going to. That was not up for discussion. So they're basically going to go back to their regular programming. And on October 21st, who knows? This probably will all come around again. And of course, we'll be here to document it.
Well, here's the other thing. And here's why this is a hoax. Jake, did you hear World of Radio this week?
I did, but for those who did not, which shame on you if you didn't, because it's on an hour before our show.
That's right.
But if you did not, Radio Kid, I will let you explain why you bring that up.
Well, apparently the A, what is it, the A-12?
Yes.
Season, Mr. Camping registered frequencies for the A-12 season past October 21st and well into March of 2012.
Now, we're referring to the shortwave station, WYFR, in Okeechobee, Florida, which is his main international outlet.
Yes.
So yes.
You know, as we know, as we now know, and as we have the distinguished, claim that we proved on our show last week, Mr. Camping is false. He's using his radio stations to spread ill will. We don't necessarily know if this qualifies under the hoax rule of the Federal Communications Commission. I doubt they'll pull the licenses, but I truly doubt that. I think Family Radio is just going to continue doing what it's doing. Actually, here's something interesting. The producer of his open forum program is Jewish, and he said, this producer said, most of the money that Harold Camping used for those billboards didn't come from the donations from his listeners. They came from the sale of 106.9 in San Francisco, his 106.9 to the CBS radio group.
Right, which was his original station.
Yes.
That he put on back in the 50s, KEAR.
Right.
And, well, I guess that's some consolation, if that's true. That's some consolation to know that people that donated, their money did not go to that particular cause. I guess that's consoling to some extent.
Right.
Now, you had mentioned that Scott Feibusch had some interesting analysis of this, which I had a chance to read. And like you, I completely agree with him. It will be interesting to see what becomes of Family Radio. There might be some station sales, because I really can't believe that this did not hurt or will not hurt their credibility.
Correct. Correct.
I
think this has damaged their credibility. What I would like to do, though, is I would like to commend the Calvary Chapel in Coachella, California. After there was a gathering of believers in Harold Camping believers outside of the Family Radio Studios in Oakland, California. When Judgment Day didn't happen, these Christians from the Calvary Church held a special service for them Sunday morning. It was to be a service without mocking, without ridicule. It was a service meant to comfort those who were disappointed that Harold Camping's prediction didn't come true. And I think that is very commendable of that church to hold services for those people. And I just, that is a great gesture. And I was really glad to be reading that.
Yes, I know normally people like us are critical of such organizations, but in this case, I have to agree. And, you know, folks, we're not anti-Christian.
No.
By any means. We're not anti any religion. And I know that it may have sounded as such from our critical analysis last week, but I want to make that clear. We are not on a tirade against the principle of religious broadcasting. Do we feel that a lot of religious broadcasters take advantage of loopholes in the FCC rules and regulations? Absolutely. But by the same token, so do other broadcasters.
Yes.
But so when we present this analysis and we present our opinions, that is not to say that we're lumping everybody into the same category, but we are taking a critical look at certain things and telling it how we see it.
That's correct.
So October 21st. Well, we'll be here.
But you know what? You know what? In the words of Harold Camping, we're not going to talk about Judgment Day anymore, and we are done with this, and we will continue on to normal programming.
That's right.
As Family Radio does this, Clearing the Static will also do the same, and we're moving on now, and we're going to talk about something that happened the day after Harold Camping's failed prediction.
Coincidence?
I don't know. You know, to the people in Joplin, Missouri, I think it may have been a coincidence. Or to them, maybe they probably felt like Harold Camping's prediction might have been coming true. As Sunday evening, an F4 tornado hit the city of Joplin, Missouri.
Yes. One of several tornadoes that broke out in the Midwest.
Yes, completely destroying almost all of that whole town. I'm not sure of a death toll at this point. I admittedly haven't been keeping up on the news on that front lately. But what I have been reading about is a great radio station.
Yes, you told me about this, and I was absolutely touched by this. I said, we definitely have to talk about this.
Well, there are two radio stations, actually, that we need to talk about. And the first one is a radio station that is in Joplin itself, News Talk KZRG. They're on AM 1390, I believe, and FM 102.9. They've been on the air. They were on the air nonstop with nonstop coverage. They ditched all syndicated programming. Their staff stayed on the air all through the night, all through the day. They didn't air Rush Limbaugh. They didn't even air Rush Limbaugh, which made Rush Limbaugh very upset.
Oh, of course, because what he has to say is far more important.
Yeah, right.
It's far, far more important than providing emergency information. And those are our words, not his. So
right, yeah.
Before all the ditto heads listening get upset, those are our words, not his.
That's right. So this radio station, you know, they stayed on the air and they really stuck with it. They gave City Hall a platform to provide emergency information, rescue services. Listeners could call in if they were looking for somebody. This radio station is commendable. And here's what's heartbreaking. Some of the staff who work for KZRG lost homes themselves. Some of these staffers don't even have homes or are missing family members. And yet these people were still at the studio. These people still showed up for work. Even though they could be taking time off, because they were committed to serving their community.
Yes.
And that in itself is such a powerful statement.
It is. And that, folks, is one reason why radio still has relevancy, because your iPod certainly wasn't going to give you that information.
That's right.
Or give you that opportunity to ask about missing relatives or to give emergency management the platform. Because, of course, the tornado destroyed a lot of the other communications.
That's right.
In the
you
area.
Know, and I, You know, I've said it before, we've railed about this before, and we'll always we'll probably continue to keep railing about this. But, you know, the advocates of these cell phone emergency networks, you know, who want to leave radio in the dust, they don't understand. They just can't get it through their thick heads. That, you know, and we've seen three such disasters like this, and time again, radio proves itself, and time again, these electronic, cell phone, iPod-hugging whatevers, corporate mindset people, just give radio the big slap in the face. Radio has again and again been left out of the equation of any emergency alert system program because, according to the... Oh, radio's a dinosaur. Well, look at what radio did in Joplin. Look at what radio did in Tuscaloosa.
That's right.
You know,
several people have said this, and unfortunately, it's true. It takes a disaster for people to see the relevance of radio these days.
Yes. And that's if your radio station even, you know, decides to provide disaster. You know, here's the thing, though. Joplin, which is its own radio market.
Right.
You know,
yes,
here's what's sad. KZRG was the only one with information on the air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All of the other stations continue with regular programming.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, that's sad.
That is sad, because what if someone doesn't care for that kind of programming? I mean, I'm certainly one that does not. So why would I think to listen to that station unless I knew that that station was providing information that needed emergency information and coverage?
Yeah. You know, but there's something even greater. And, you know, when I was talking to Jake about it, and it's so powerful. It brings tears to my eyes when I think about it. There is a radio station in Santa Fe, New Mexico. It's KBAC 98.1. Now, it's owned by a company called Hutton Broadcasting. KBAC is a AAA radio station. And as you know, KBAC is... you know, at least 800 miles away from Joplin, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
Not only have they sent out trucks of emergency supplies and help already, they already sent stuff. Now, from New Mexico to Missouri, that's quite a drive.
Oh, yes. Yes, it is.
Not only have they sent out stuff, but next week they are holding a 3-hour-long... it's called the Help Joplin Night, or something along those lines. And it's a 3-hour concert of Janis Joplin tribute bands. All the money is going to go to relief and help for the people of Joplin, Missouri. If the money isn't being spent for that, then it will be spent for, you know, actually buying supplies for the people of Joplin. And the staff at KBAC have donated some of their own funds and their own money, some of it out of their own personal paychecks, to help the people of Joplin.
I have to give these people credit for what they've done and what they're doing. That's amazing.
That is.
That's amazing. If other stations and other markets did the same thing, I mean, that city could rebuild and would have no worries.
That's right. And I cried when I first read that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. That just goes to show that there is still a lot of humanitarian good in this world. And
we will be doing a Kids Corner review next month, and one of the first stations, if they're streaming, which I haven't been to the website to check, but if they're streaming, one of the first stations we will do on next month's Kids Corner will be KBAC.
As well it should be.
Yes. So, but we had to bring these things up because, again, radio proved itself again. you know, and to me, it always, you know, and I could yell and scream at these people, but honestly, you know what? There's no point. You know, time and time again, I've seen radio, you know, get treated like the bad gymnast going through the hoops. And, you know, time and time again, radio has always had to walk the tightrope to prove itself ever since technology has been evolving. You know, radio has always had to walk the tightrope. And I just, you know, I just have to wonder when these people are going to wake up and start putting radio back into the figures of inclusion for these emergency networks, because radio really is the portable medium for getting emergency information out there. And I'm just saddened that our government, our emergency officials, the people in the cell phone industry, the people in the electronics industry, I understand it, but I'm saddened that they can't understand that radio is the best backup medium for this equation.
It is. It is. And it should never be taken out of the equation. Until such time, which it's debatable whether there will ever be a time when the cell phone networks and the internet wireless networks can be as reliable as radio and not give out so quickly during emergencies. Could we see that? Could we one day see that day? Possibly. I mean, I'm not a computer expert by any means, or a cell phone technology expert by any means, but that technology is, whether we like it or not, constantly evolving and improving. But I still think we're a long way from seeing that day coming.
Yeah. Yep.
So, yes, definitely radio saves the day, again, in Joplin, Missouri, and in other Midwestern communities that have experienced these tornadoes. And the sad reality is, folks, that we're only in the beginning of the severe weather season, the summer severe weather season for that part of the country. Let's hope that there won't be much more of that to come, or any more of that to come, but undoubtedly there will be. And I certainly hope that radio will continue to be there as needed.
That's correct. I'd like to move on now to something a little bit more controversial and a little bit more hot on the button.
Okay.
Now, the Sunshine State.
Yes, yes.
Wherever that is.
That's Florida.
What the headline says.
It's Florida.
Florida? All right. Governor Rick Scott. I thought Marco Rubio was the governor of Florida. Okay. Governor Rick Scott has decided to zero out all funding for public radio in the Sunshine State, effective immediately.
Yes, you did tell me about this. So here again, another state that is deciding that it needs to pull out of the public broadcasting funding game, as it were. And another very disturbing trend, indeed.
Now, let's clear this up for our audience. Florida does not have a state-run network, per se.
No, they are all privately owned, owned by private nonprofit organizations like WMFE in Orlando and WLRN in Miami and WUSF in Tampa and many others.
That's correct. But those stations get, or used to get, some funding from the government.
Well, now we should make this clear. This is state funding. This is nothing to do with the federal funding.
Right. This is state, Florida state-funded radio.
Correct.
They would get a portion of Florida state funding.
Right. And now they are not.
Now they are not.
Which is a part of a seemingly continuing trend. Of course, New Jersey was in the news for this recently, although they were in a slightly different situation because they actually did own and operate the public radio network. They still do, but it is for sale. I find it interesting that the funding was cut for radio, but not for television. And the same thing was true, of course, in New Jersey.
Yes.
So this demonstrates that they see public television as more important and more viable than public radio.
Well, and Jake, who wouldn't? I mean, here's the thing. I'm not saying NPR is not known, but again, it goes back to a content issue. Now, you watch public television, what do you see? Well, most of the time when you turn on the public television, no offense, but most of the time when you turn on public television, you see Big Bird or Barney or the Cookie Monster or...
Actually, nowadays it's the Veggie Monster.
The Veggie Monster. Yes. They took my Cookie Monster away. Or Curious George.
Well, I see what you're saying. Children's programming.
Right. You turn this on, you see, you know, interested in little children's cartoons. So, public television has become, in most cases, a channel that you can turn on in the morning, set your kid in front of the TV, and walk away from it for 12 hours. It has become a babysitter.
In a lot of ways, yes. Although they still, I mean, you still have plenty of outstanding programming at night and on weekends.
Right. But what I'm saying is that's not what it's known for.
No, certainly not. And in the decades since the forming of PBS, it has been most associated with children's programming. In fact, whenever it was discussed about funding being in jeopardy, people who opposed the canceling or killing of public broadcasting funding were saying, well, they're trying to kill Big Bird.
Yes.
So you're right. I really hadn't given it much thought, but now that you bring it to the floor, Radio Kid, you are right. Most people associate public broadcasting with television and with children's television and nothing more. That's unfortunate, I think, but it is true.
It's true, but that's because PBS painted itself into that corner. Now, the point is, you know, most parents don't want to see their babysitter go away.
Well, no, of course not. But,
you know,
but the argument could be made that, and this is why I find it very interesting that the discussion here is canceling funding for public radio and not public broadcasting as a whole, because certainly the argument could be made there are other outlets for children's programming. And if you have cable, and let's face or satellite, and let's face it, folks, most people do. They have cable or they have satellite. You can receive any number of kids' channels. Nickelodeon has several that cater to kids of all ages. There are several channels offered by Disney these days. It's not just the Disney Channel. You have Toon Disney. You have a Disney network that's, I forget the name of it, but it's a lot like the Nick Jr. and programming that you see on PBS.
Actually, that will be coming soon. That's not here yet.
Okay, I thought it was already there because interesting note here. I was in the dentist office a couple of weeks ago, and this dentist normally caters to kids. I mean, he has patients of all ages, but I suspect a lot of kids come to his office because the television is on in the waiting room, and it was on, and they were airing programming skewing at a very young audience produced by Disney. Now, maybe that was on the Disney Channel itself. I can't say I was paying attention.
Well,
but
let me ask you this. You have a cable lineup, right? Sorry, folks, we're getting off topic, but you have cable, don't you?
I do.
Do you still have SoapNet?
You know what? I don't know.
If you do, the channel isn't... Because SoapNet, they're going to kill SoapNet and put the It's called the Playhouse Disney Channel.
Okay, Playhouse Disney, that's what it was.
Yes.
That's what it was that I saw in the dentist office. Thank you for jogging my memory. Thank you. Yes, that's what I saw. I'm positive.
Okay.
That I heard the term Playhouse Disney.
Yes. Okay. Now, here's the here's the difference, though, between that and what you get on PBS. Now, granted, it's been a while since I've seen Nick Jr. I've never seen Playhouse Disney. I've never ever seen Playhouse Disney, so I can't speak to what I haven't seen. But I've seen some Nick Jr. stuff. The difference is the programming on PBS is not of an entertainment value. It is mostly or solely educational children's programming. The argument being, if you leave that stuff in the hands of Nick Jr. or
Disney,
Playhouse Disney, you know, some of that stuff doesn't even meet general network TV EI requirements. For those who don't know, EI is an FCC requirement. It's called Educational Informational. Network television has to air 3.5 hours worth of that kind of programming. Most of them just slap an EI bug on their cartoons and call it that. PBS, on the other hand, it does, you know, you if you watch Sesame Street, you're going to be learning about letters and numbers, and if you watch Curious George, you're going to be learning about reading, and if you watch Sid the Science Kid, you're going to be learning about science.
That's true. That's true. I mean, I certainly have fond memories of learning things from Sesame Street when I was a kid.
Yes.
So,
I mean, I don't know. Now, radio, on the other hand, getting back to radio, because people are going to get so mad. We're talking about TV. Why are you talking about TV?
Well, we do talk about television on this program.
Yes, we do.
So,
but getting back to radio, you know, public radio, for the most part, isn't something that you can leave on all day. There are people who do it. I know people who will do that. But most, especially your news talk stations, I know I like to pick on them, but I'm telling the truth here. It's very difficult to leave a news talk station on all day unless you're actually there to listen to it all day. People listen to the news when they get up in the morning. They listen to it when they're driving home. Maybe they'll turn it on at night, maybe for a weekend checkup, but that's about it. PBS television, because of that children's programming, it means something to so many families. That's why they're fighting this. Radio is the easy victim. Public radio is the easy victim here, okay? It's the weakest wire in the link.
It is.
That you can cut.
It is, because of the argument you just said. And forget it if the station does arts and cultural programming. Like if it's classical music or jazz or AAA, then it's even less important.
Right.
Which is very disturbing. And it's actually interesting that we're talking about this because, of course, recently WMFE in Orlando dropped classical music from its programming.
Yes, and WDUQ in Pittsburgh will be dropping jazz.
Right, something that we find very disturbing here at Geneva Community Radio for various reasons. But, yeah, so I guess this is why radio is seen as irrelevant, or radio is being left to fend for itself. Now, will this be the end of public radio in Florida? Certainly not. I certainly not, but will it make it that much harder for stations to be able to continue? Yes. And will you see programming changes to try and attract more pledge dollars?
Yes.
I think you will. More news talk and less music and specialty shows. Of course, I suppose it would also depend on the market. Of course, every market is unique in terms of what stations it has. So,
yes.
It will be interesting to see what happens and where. But now I have to wonder, we've seen this in two states thus far, how many more will jump on this bandwagon?
Probably a lot more than you think.
You know, that's probably right. I mean, I know it sounds a lot like we are making our own gloom and doom predictions here, but it just seems to me, in this economy, that will be one of the first things that a state legislator or governor will look at and say, wait a minute, why are we spending money on this?
That's correct.
We have more important things to worry about. And, in truth, in most cases, they do.
Yes. But at what, you know, I don't know. As you know, Jake, and as the audience of this program knows, I'm neutral on this issue. I really don't have an opinion either way about government funding for public broadcasting. But you kind of have to wonder at what cost. Like, okay, if you do the cutting, at what point, how far do you really want to cut?
Right. Absolutely.
And we'd like to know what you think. Do you think other states will follow?
Yes, that is our question for this week.
That is our JAIKU question. So add us as a contact on our JAIKU page, and then comment on our soon-to-be update on JAIKU. We're at clearingthestatic.jaiku.com, clearingthestatic.jaiku.com.
Yes, and we really must apologize, folks, for our lack of update of this program. It's a bit overdue. Some things have come up, and of course some very critical topics have come up that we've wanted to discuss, so we do apologize for the delay on the relaunch of the program, but we promise it's coming.
It is definitely coming.
And that's no hoax.
No, we are not trying to do our best imitation of Harold Camping. Although we do have audio of him here, if we ever want to.
That's right.
I've got about 6 hours worth of Harold Camping audio. If you need a cure for insomnia,
that'll do it.
we've got one. In other news,
yes.
Let's talk about this. Since we said we were going to talk about it, there's a new radio station on in the southern tier of New York State.
Yes, it is. It's been a long time coming, too.
I will pause and wait while the majority of our audience says, who cares? the new 97.1, I believe the call letters are WZRD, although I'm not...
I thought it was WZHD.
Thank you. To match PhD. Okay. That makes sense. WZHD... They're on the air. Now, the website 100,000watts.com says that they're on the air with classic hits as Cool 97.1. However, when you go and search the in the actual database of the 100KW site, it lists the station as simulcasting the Met, WMTT. I am rather inclined to believe the top headline, especially given the call letters, WZHD.
Yes, that would match the call letters of a co-owned station, WPHD, which is licensed to South Waverly, Pennsylvania, and serving the Elmira, Waverly, Sayre region.
So we were talking about this new WZHD, and we were talking about, you know, where will it serve and what kind of overlap will it have with Elmira?
And the answer, coming from someone who grew up in that area, is none.
None. Which is good. So they're safe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Now, I would be curious to learn, because neither of us have heard this station. If it is a straight simulcast of 96.1, or if they are running their own separate stream with a similar format. And if they are running a separate stream, where is it being programmed out of? I'd be curious to know if it's being programmed out of the headquarters of the Elmira cluster of the organization, or if they have a studio somewhere else a bit closer to Canasarega. I would doubt that it is actually in Canasarega. No disrespect to the good people of that community, but most likely, for me anyway, if I were building and operating that station, I would have a studio in Dansville or the more likely place, Hornell.
Now, in Bath, you'll probably be able to hear both, won't you?
Yes.
Now,
yes.
We should say that Bath is where Jake is originally
from.
Originally used to live.
Yes, born and raised.
Yes. So that's why we referred to that. Now, for those of you who are hoping to hear this new cool 97.1, you can let go, stop holding your breath. Number one, it's not all that exciting. It's classic hits. Number two, Equinox or Kevin Fitzgerald or Telekoha, they don't stream their stations. They never have. They probably never will.
Right. And that's just speculation on the Radio Kids part. But no, it is interesting because this station is a long time coming. I remember reading about the CP when it was granted. Actually, the company that originally got the CP in an auction was something called RJ Broadcasting. And there was all kinds of speculation as to just what RJ Broadcasting was. Some people, myself included, had thought maybe it would be a religious station. But then, of course, it was sold to Kevin Fitzgerald, and the call letters WZHD were applied for. Actually, it's interesting, because at one point, there was talk of swapping this frequency with 101.9, which is an existing allocation in Alfred. It is owned by Robert Funtner and Pembroke Pines Media Group. That is WZKZ, which is running satellite country, serving the Hornell and Wellsville markets from a transmitter in Alfred, studios in Wellsville. There had been talk of swapping allocations so that 97.1 would be licensed to Alfred and 101.9 would be licensed to Canasarega. Obviously, this did not, and it most likely now will not, occur. I remember.
Yeah, I think you had told me about that once before.
I did, and I remember reading about it in Northeast Radio Watch. So it looks like that's not going to happen. It looks like those allocations are permanent. Although that could change. It could change, but right now I don't see that happening. So it would appear that they are trying to do classic hits for, my guess is, the Dansville-Hornell market. It certainly is not, at least I don't believe, is in a position to reach Rochester.
No.
Certainly not from there. And you had asked about Elmira. There's no way it will reach Elmira. It's some distance from that market. So Hornell, I would think, would be the most likely target. Or maybe Hornell and Wellsville. It may reach Wellsville as well. Not seeing an actual coverage map, this is only my opinion. And I have not actually heard the station.
The only place you can get coverage maps, I think, on the web is, reliably, is Radio Locator. I don't even think, I think sometimes 100KW has them.
Yes, they do. But being sight impaired, it's difficult for me to read them and comprehend them.
Oh, yeah,
so
definitely.
That's why we may seem a little ignorant when we're talking about technical specifications. We're not trying to be, folks. We just, sometimes we don't have access to that information as much as we would like. But no, it would appear that another new station is on in this fairly rural area, which has seen a lot of new radio activity in the last few years. Of course, 101.9 is a still fairly new allocation that came on in 2000, followed a few years later by another Pembroke Pines allocation, 93.5 in Wellsville. They are doing CHR. And so now you've got 97.1.
That's correct.
So it is interesting to see the radio market expanding in this region, especially considering that, unfortunately, about a year and a half ago now, the area lost one of its heritage stations.
Ah!
Yes, you see where I'm going with this. WHHO 1320 lost its license for failure to pay fines that were levied against it. And the owner said pretty much, I haven't got the money to pay the fine, so we're going to have to let the license run out. Most unfortunate. Granted, some people will say, well, that's an AM station. You know, these are FM stations. So, but it is interesting to see that there are still people who believe in investing in the radio in that market.
Yes. And so we had to mention that on this show.
Oh, absolutely. Of course, for those not familiar, the show is produced here in upstate New York. So we do tend to gravitate toward topics of interest to that region. But, of course, we talk about stuff from all over the North American continent. So
yes. Do we have more time on this show? Or
oh, yes. Yes, we do.
Well, here's something I'd like to bring up. Jake and I were talking about this off the air, and I said, why are we talking about this off the air? This should be a conversation for clearing the static. Jake had called me, and as he was calling me, I was scanning the radio, and I came across the Bengals, Walk Like an Egyptian, on what is our classic hits radio station, formerly Oldies. You know, the Oldies format has migrated to what's now called Classic Hits, 92.1 WSCN, serving the Syracuse market. And it just shocked me to hear the Bengals, Walk Like an Egyptian, on that radio station. Because when I was growing up, WSCN, or Oldies 92, as it was known, was known for playing Elvis and the Supremes and the Turtles and the Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons and the... Well, you get the idea. And I was remarking to Jake, you know what, this is making me feel old.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, I was just kind of reminiscing about that too, because of course we had our own oldies stations growing up. And yes, I certainly have to sympathize with that, because I'm older than the radio kid by a few years, and it is. It's a very unsettling feeling at times. But as I explained to the radio kid, it's unfortunately, it's just part of the trend, because this music is getting older. The 80s now are, 1980 is 31 years ago now. 1985 is 26 years ago now. So it is really all about keeping up with the demographic that's aging. Now, I had read somewhere that most oldies stations use a base year that's usually 25 years from where they're currently, or 25 years prior to where they're currently at. In 1990, the base year for oldies was 1965, and you had stations programming music from about 10 years before and 10 years after. So it's only natural, of course, now, 25 years ago is 1986.
Right.
So now we're seeing more 70s and 80s, especially more 80s in the rotations of classic hits stations.
Yes.
And I think this trend is going to continue to go upward.
Yes. Now, you know what? Here's what's surprising to me, and maybe it's just because of, you know, when I was born, and, you know, you're only a couple years older than me, but honestly, I'm surprised that the 50s and 60s paradigm didn't shift away from oldies sooner. You didn't start seeing oldies stations dropping the 50s and 60s until the early 2000s decade.
Yes, but think about it this way. 2000 minus 25 is 1975.
Right.
Do you see the math here? Do you see the logic?
Yes.
That's why. I really believe that's got a lot to do with it. Just like 2010 minus 25 is 1985.
Right. So, yes, which is why you're seeing all these stations playing songs from, you know, 1985. Because I think, now back when these old, which, now oldies, what, that didn't start to become a format until the late 80s.
Well, no. Not meaning to correct you, but no, really, this oldies radio that you and I knew as we were growing up actually came about in the 70s. There was a trend in the early 70s, which is reflected in some of the television programs of that era, like Happy Days. There was a nostalgic feeling. A lot of people were feeling nostalgic for the 1950s. And that's when you began seeing stations like WCBS-FM. They debuted a format which I want to say at the outset was all 50s music in 1972.
Okay. But, all right, let's just bring it up to 1975. What's 25 years minus 1975?
Well, that would be 1950.
All right. So, essentially, an oldies station in 1975 should have had 1950 as their base.
And they might have. Unfortunately, not being around during that time, I couldn't say.
Right. I mean, I don't know. I just remember that I remember the 50s and 60s music base being around for a lot longer than 10 years. Now, granted, you know, you still have 70s on the radio, but even then, like I notice on the classic hit stations, it's more like the late 70s into the 80s now.
Right.
And I guess my point is the 50s and 60s music didn't go away as quickly as, say, the 60s and 70s paradigm.
That's true.
The 60s and 70s paradigm only lasted about 10 years. Before that started, not even. Really, not even.
No.
I'd give that maybe a good 7 or 8.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right.
The 50s and 60s. God, I remember, you know, back when I was a young kid, my mom would listen to the oldies station that would play the 50s and 60s. Now, in 2000, when most stations started dropping it, I was 14.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that stuck around for quite a while.
It did.
That paradigm.
It did. And it could be that they feel the need to excel the pace at which they update their music because they feel the demographic is getting older,
yes.
Which it is.
I understand that. I guess I just had to express my shock that the paradigm is changing so fast.
Oh, no, I mean, no, I completely agree with you, and it is sad.
I never thought I would hear the Bengals walk like an Egyptian on a so-called oldies station.
Now, do you, you're very good at speculation and making predictions. Do you feel that in 2020, for instance, we will start seeing songs from 1995 as the base?
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, that scares me so much. I was a 10-year-old kid in 1995. That is scary.
Yes, it is.
That is scary.
But it will happen. I mean, you're already starting to see 90s retro shows.
Yes.
That are on the air now, so...
you're already starting to see, as we've talked about here on Clearing the Static, you're starting to see a boom of 90s-focused radio stations. That's usually the first sign.
Yes, because, of course, remember in the early 2000s, remember all the stations jumping on the 80s bandwagon?
Yes.
Yeah, so you're starting to see that again.
Another thing you're seeing is that the 80s music is disappearing from AC and hot AC. Now, that is odd. That's odd, too. That's another odd paradigm. Because when I was growing up, 80s, the AC stations, that's all they ever played.
Yeah, I remember that, too. And that's probably why I really like a lot of that music.
Yeah, but you know, I noticed, though, that the AC stations and hot AC stations aren't as big on the 90s as they were in the... I mean, you had 80s specialty shows up the yin-yang, and I'm not really seeing a lot of 90s integration with AC and hot AC radio.
No, and that rather surprises me. I would have thought that you would see
more. Well, the 90s were so diverse musically, I'm not sure. I don't think AC radio knows what to do with it.
Well, that's true. That's true. I mean, certainly you saw a lot of... If you listened to CHR back then, you heard a lot of different types of music, which is more than can be said for CHR currently, but...
Yeah.
You know, it fascinated me back then to be able to hear an alternative track, which alternative music was really starting to take hold commercially back then. Right up against a hip-hop track.
Yes.
But of course, Top 40 radio, up until recently, has always been very diverse. I mean, in terms of oldies stations, you only hear what was number one, because they only play the top hits that people remember. But if you were to listen to a Top 40 station in 1966... you would hear the Beatles, but if Frank Sinatra was in the top 40 that year, which he was, you'd hear that as well.
That's correct.
So that says something for the trend as far as diversity in contemporary hit radio.
That is correct. So, but I know you're going to see oldies stations I have to call them what they are now, classic hits. Classic hits radio stations. You will see classic hits radio stations moving progressively forward in time.
Right. And that, of course, makes us wonder where the oldies are going to go. In a lot
Probably
of cases,
the same
they've
place
just.
Standards are headed right now.
Well, that's true. In a lot of cases, they've just disappeared.
Yeah.
Syracuse is fortunate. I know you're a bit bitter, and I understand why, because you can't hear them, but they're fortunate in that the company that owns WSEN is still doing 50s and 60s oldies on their lower grade AM signal.
Yes. Now, if James V. Johnson would just get a streaming internet connection over here, we'd be much appreciated.
Absolutely. So, no, and actually... we discussed this a while ago. I have to wonder if maybe you're going to start seeing these formats appearing on non-commercial radio. You already are, to some extent.
Yeah. Yeah, the best example I can come up with is WGVU in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Well, what about WCNY, HD2 in Syracuse?
HD2, yes. That's they're doing it also.
I wonder if that's going to become the new classical. You know?
I hope so.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't mind it, but I certainly don't want to see classical music disappear.
Well, no, because the thing is, though, but Jake, you've got these companies that have these public radio companies that have these AM stations that don't know what to do with them.
Well, there aren't too many of those, though. There really aren't. It's mostly FM.
Yeah. But I could see WNYC or WNED doing something like that.
Certainly.
You know? Because WNYC has an AM and an FM, why they could just split off the AM and...
Absolutely. Well, it'll be interesting to follow the progression of oldies and classic hits. Unfortunately, our time is gone for this week.
Alrighty, so if you want to contact the program, here's how you do it. Our website is clearingthestatic.tripod.com, clearingthestatic.tripod.com. If you wish to send email or news tips or anything else to the radio show, you can email us. We're at radionewsnow@ymail.com, radionewsnow@ymail.com. Add us as a contact and answer our question on our Jaiku page. We're at clearingthestatic.jaiku.com, clearingthestatic.jaiku.com. And friend us on our profile on Radio Jocks. We're at radiojocks.com/profile/clearingthestatic. That's radiojox.com/profile/clearingthestatic. And remember, all you radio geeks and geekazoids, video didn't kill the radio star. It killed the oldies instead.
Clearing the Static is a presentation of Geneva Community Radio, which is solely responsible for its content.